young men doing? What's going on at this moment?
I really have no clue. These guys, well, you know, it's very dangerous. And we journalists normally run to these areas before anybody. Journalists and medical crew, ambulances, we run the first people to the area after the evacuation. I thought that the Israeli army have left this area. It's Block J area. I thought that they left and we are going to just go and to take photos of the destruction is caused after 3 days of attack. Well, each of them is taking cover from the Israeli bullets because they didn't leave the Israeli army the area. They were inside the area. The first one wants to see if his house is still standing. The second one is coming to see if his school bag is still down there. The other one is coming to bring his bicycle from under the ruins of the house. Most of them were lucky that they managed to escape. Others, they were not lucky because they were killed while they were inside.
Hamad, when was this picture taken? Do you
2005, this one.
And can you just give a general idea of how many homes, how many apartments have been demolished in Rafah in the past since around 2003 when they started the mass demolitions in that area?
Well, you know, there is no real record. Most of records are conflicting. United Nations have their own record. Palestinian Authority have their own record. The International Red Cross have their own record. So it's really conflicting. You cannot find what is the destruction. And the thing that most of these areas that they are left partially demolished. So it's very difficult for you to start to see what really happened and how many of those were demolished. But I can tell you it's thousands of families in Rafah alone are homeless. And they are until today waiting for their houses to be built. The United Nations, they have a project to rebuild the houses in areas, but Israel is not allowing cement and steel to get into the Gaza Strip to rebuild the houses which were demolished.
And I think it's worth also pointing out that 80% of the people in Gaza are like your family. They're refugees from other parts of Palestine that are now considered to be in Israel. And so this might be the second or third or fourth time that they experience a violent displacement from their home. It's a tragic reality that much of your work has been documenting deaths and injuries in Gaza. And it's looking at many of the photos that you've taken, it seems unimaginable. It's impossible to relate to that experience, really. But there are some pictures that convey it. Some of them, there'll be warnings before. Some of them will be a little bit graphic, and you'll have a warning so you can look away if you want to.
Well, if you allow me 1 minute to comment in this photo. In this photo shows the one thing, the shift in the Israeli policy. How? Before 2005, Israel used to be in the Gaza Strip. And the destruction of houses was most of the time using tanks and bulldozers that got inside. They would never use sonic boobs or F-16 missiles to bomb houses. Why? Because there are Jewish children living in the Gaza Strip. They don't want to disturb them. After the disengagement from the Gaza Strip, Israel left Gaza and they would not care. Now, it's around 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You receive a phone call from a blocked number. You don't see who's the caller. Someone is calling you in a broken Arabic language. And I got that. I got one of those calling me. I said, I'm glad that I don't have a house. He's saying, evacuate your house. We're going to bomb it now. You don't know what's going to happen. In 1 minute, is it going to be around 1 minute? 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes? Actually, some of those families, they hardly manage to walk their children and run. Because you look in the sky and you find the F-16 just right on top of your house. And it's about to bomb the house. Some of them have missed it, and it's very tragic evidence. Like this situation, you see these two boys, they are waiting for one of the trucks to bring the bodies under the ground of their brothers and sisters who were killed under the ground. See what happened to the neighbors. This is the target house here where the two boys are standing. This is the target house where the two boys here. This house used to be exactly like the building in the background. See what happened to the neighbors. And this happened when everybody is asleep. Just they arrive to the hospital with horror. They don't know where to run. Many of them were injured and some were killed while they were asleep.
And that's a continuous process. Just in the on Friday night, there were 12 air attacks on Gaza. And we know that people also received the phone calls that you talked about, telling them to evacuate. And one of the sites Israel hit was a cheese factory, one of the only cheese dairies in Gaza that supplied milk and yogurt and cheese to much of the Gaza Strip, and that was just on Friday night.
You know why? I don't know. I mean, I got the journalist who's telling me, I'm wondering why the Israelis are bombing this cheese factory. And then he's trying to say, well, yeah, I know now why. They don't want to export the cheese to Israel from Gaza. And I said, how do you mean by that? He said, they don't, because this is like for local thing. He said, maybe they think that homemade rockets are made through cheese and milk as well.
Could be. You never know what Israel might consider to be a threat. Muhammad, people in Palestine, in many homes, have pictures like this in their homes. When you look at this, what story does this tell you?
Unfortunately, not all of them. We put photos in the wall, but not everybody is alive. I really wouldn't put my photo on the wall unless I'm really dead. That is the case here. Ahmed is my cousin.
He's the one on the...
Yeah, Ahmed, he's 13 years old boy. And Asma, she's 14 years old boy. They were killed in 2005 in an operation that Israel called, look at the name, what they call it, Operation Rainbow. And I'm going to tell you the other examples of the operations. They were both killed, just to make it, to keep it short. Both were shot in the head. And Asma was upstairs. She was trying to get the clothes drying in the sun. Ahmed, he was feeding his pigeons. This is the mother pointing out where the bullets were coming from. And if you ask me in the part of question and answer about the nationality of the soldiers, according to eyewitnesses, reports that I have collected on the ground, I can tell you on that, because Israel have hired the most professional snipers in the world to do that. Unfortunately, the pigeons are still alive.
I missed the picture of the pigeons.
Okay. the pigeons are still alive, and the spent bullets on the children. I had the photo. It's just a jar like this, full of spent bullets on the two children who were just killed while they were on the roof.
It was like a dish, absolutely full of spent
shells. Full of bullets, basically. Yeah. And the pigeons are still alive, but both of them are killed.
Maybe at this point, we could take one or two questions if people have any questions they'd like to ask up to this point. And a microphone will come over to you, so just wait. And this gentleman here.
In one of your comments, you mentioned that our tax dollars pay for this. Do you see any remedy to that situation?
That wasn't my comment. That was a comment that I got from those who are writing back to me, and I'm getting these comments until today. I get hundreds of emails from readers monthly basis, and all those people who are telling me that, and I hear it quite often. Perhaps Ali is in a much better position to see, to tell you here what or in what sense the United States is funding the Israeli occupation. This is something that I get constantly from my readers.
Well, one of the things that the current administration pledged when it came into office was to provide Israel with an additional $30 billion in military assistance over the next decade. and to make available to Israel, this was one of the pledges of the new administration, to make available to Israel for the first time weapons which have been available only to NATO members up to this point. So a deepening of the Israeli-military relationship. And last week when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was here, the United States and Israel signed a couple of weapons deals for several hundred million dollars, which was telling because all the headlines were about US-Israeli sort of tension, but you know, behind the scenes it was business as usual. And we will see some of the effect of some of the weapons that I'd like you to talk about more in a few moments.
Well, this is a photo of my brother, Hussam. He was 17 years old when he was killed by the Israeli snipers. Hussam, it was 18th of October 2003, around 7 o'clock. He was just getting ready to go to school. Unfortunately, he could not continue to go to school because he was shot by 7 M16 bullets in the head, the neck, the chest, and the rest of the body. Hussam, he had nothing to do with army or politics. The only thing he had to do is to go to his school because he wanted to go to the university afterwards. What is more tragic in his death, and this is happening until today, when he was shot right next to our house, they tried to bring him his body, one of our neighbors. Her name is Widad Al-Ajrami. She's 34 years old woman. The lady could not stand a boy bleeding for many hours. So she approached his body, trying to drag him from his feet, catching him like this. She could not continue 2 feet away because an Israeli sniper hit her in the head, leaving her killed. Two bodies are lying down for a few moments. Her husband, Abu Labid, is coming out of the house screaming, yelling, "What's happening? My wife." He's just in a horror. He tried to carry his wife. He could not continue 2 more feet away because he was also injured, and today he's paralyzed. His brother could not see his brother is also injured. He was also injured, his brother, while he was trying to take the body. 4 bodies lying down, blood everywhere, ambulances, phone calls from people who are calling around to bring an ambulance. Ambulance on the right side, it was shot at by the Israeli snipers. The ambulance on the left side, the Israeli bulldozers, they were making kind of sand barriers to make it impossible. The other ones, they shoot the wheels of the ambulance, it's not possible to move. I called the ambulance and say, "Why don't you bring the bodies to this?" I didn't know that it was my brother, in fact. I didn't know. I have no idea that this is Hussam. I didn't know. What I got is the most horrifying details of this is Aboud and Asma. Asma is 3 years old and Aboud 2 years old. He could not stand seeing their mother and father bleeding. Asma is next to the body of her father, trying to wake him up, shaking him like this. Dad, he's not answering. She's trying to he said, "I'm injured. I'm going to die." She screams for help. There is no one to help. Aboud is trying to wake up his mother, the 2 years old boy, trying to wake her up. Mom, she's dead. She's not answering. Aboud was injured while he was right next to the body of his mother trying to wake her up. I visited Aboud later on. He's a traumatized child. It's very difficult to get this out of his mind. It's impossible. There is no mother that can come after that for him. He just say, "I remember my mother. I saw her killed in front of my eyes." Few hours later, the bodies were allowed, because the ambulances were allowed in, and where I saw the body of my brother riddled with 7 M16 bullets in his neck, head, chest, and the rest of his body.
Mohammed, what date was that?
It was 18th of October 2003, 7 o'clock in the morning.
And what, do you know any reason why this happened? I mean, what, did, were the Israelis ever asked why these people were shot? Was anyone ever held accountable for these killings?
Well, that doesn't happen, because, you know, it goes on and on all the times. So, you know, if you talk about massacre today of 20 or 30 people killed, then, you know, the next day it's just finished. In 2006, Athamnal family in the northern part of the Gaza Strip, 16 family members were killed in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 2006 November, Desmond Tutu, the South African UN official, came to Gaza to investigate the story. He carried out the investigation showing that Israel is responsible in this. What happened to the investigation? Nothing. Take the Goldstone report and take Richard Falk report and take many, many human rights groups and commissions that come to do investigation. So there is no, most of the time if there is an investigation, then it's just finished. They don't handle it.
Mohammed, you told me something that really shocked me. I mean, as much as I know about this issue, it still shocked me. You had 7 siblings, 7 brothers and sisters together, and you told me that 6 out of 7 have been injured.
Yeah. 6 of my brothers were, and my sister also, she was injured. My mother was also injured, one of them who had, I'm the oldest, and one of them, he had been shot right in his hand, in his leg, where he had, I don't know if the rocket missiles, and by the way, all the children in Gaza are really professional in knowing what types of rockets are the Israelis using. This is M16, this is 250, this is 500, this is 1000, this is Lao missile, this is bulldozer missile. They would know everything. So he knows what is inside his leg. He was 12 years old, Ahmad, and he was injured in his leg while he was going to his school. And today he, if you light a cigarette and put it anywhere in his leg, he would not feel that, because he's no longer feeling that it hurts, because the nerves are completely damaged. One of my other brothers was also injured in the spine, and it's very difficult for him to move. Another one had lost his eye, and another one, my sister also was injured, and my mother was also injured while she was trying to jump out of the window of the kitchen when the Israeli bulldozer approached the house to demolish our house. She was right inside the house, and suddenly the Israeli bulldozers are coming to demolish the house. So she had no way to run, because when the Israeli bulldozers coming to destroy house, they come right from the door. There is no possibility for you to get. So my mother had to jump out of the window of the kitchen, where she had her leg broken, as well as my sister, who were inside the house. By the time I arrived to the house, every gentleman I see in the road is telling me, after long waiting at the checkpoint Abu Holid, nearly 4 hours, I didn't know. Nobody told me that our house was demolished. So what I got to know, a gentleman is telling me, Mohammed, where are you going? I said, home. A second person is telling me, Mohammed, where are you going? I answered, home. Why are you asking? He said, no, nothing, nothing. A third person, Mohammed, where are you going? I said, home. He said to me, oh, be careful down there. Careful? What is this? It's like the first time one is telling me, be careful there. I arrived to the house and I found the house is not existing anymore. There is nothing left behind. All I have is my Palestinian ID and my school bag. And nothing is left. Just everything is completely demolished and under the ruins of the house. What really strikes me is the rumors that I hear in the background. Someone who's saying his mother is killed, other one who's saying his mother is injured, someone who's saying his sister is under the ground, other one is saying that his brothers are all arrested after they were injured. I got really confused. I got to the hospital and I heard the story from my mother, who is recovering today, but she is still suffering as a result of this damage in the kneecap when she had to jump out of the window of the kitchen to escape the demolishing of the house.
So many of the pictures you've taken are of really quite horrifying scenes, and I didn't want to, you know, one always struggles. We struggle with this when we're publishing on the electronic intifada. We don't want to look at things just for the sensationalism, nor do we want to offend people's dignity. And yet, the reality is that people see things every day. Men, women, and children see things in Gaza every day that the vast majority of us would never see in an entire lifetime. And some of the pictures, a few of them, I wanted to show the audience. The first one, although there's a warning, it's not actually very graphic. I'll give you a chance to look away. I'll put it up for a few seconds, and then I'll. But this one is not particularly graphic. This is someone who is injured. But this, Mohammed, you told me was due to a certain type of gas.
We were actually. This is not really graphic, by the way.
No, this isn't.
This is not
the.
Yeah, we were inside the southern part of Gaza in Nasser Hospital, in Khan Yunis. The journalists were sitting there, and normally, as journalists, it's very difficult. You have to spend all the time in these areas, if not in the area of the action where the bombings is taking place. Then you go to the hospital and follow up the story of the families. We saw this. Crowds of ambulances are coming. Everybody is just ambulances are. Coming like crazy. Every ambulance is coming with 10 and 15 people, just pushing them all. And all of them are just men and women and the children. Middle of the night, they are beating themselves. Some of them are taking their eyes, you know, they want to kick themselves, beating themselves and like, you know, kicking like this, and they are just having, they're just going mad. I say, what's happening? Each one of those needs four doctors, and there is not enough doctors inside the hospital to control them. You have to take one from each arm and one from each leg to control them. They want to kill themselves. I asked the director of the hospital at Al-Nasser Hospital in the south, sir, what's happening? Can you tell me, doctor, what's happening? He said, we have no idea. This is something that we, for the first time, we receive. And then everybody is arriving to the hospital. Those people are just beating themselves. We are not able to control. It's a total mess in the hospital. Nobody is able to control all this misery. At the end, or a few days later, we got to know the secret of this, and one of the doctors got to know that Israel is using something called white tear gas, which is internationally prohibited.
The next image is a little bit difficult, so if you don't want to look away, I'll put it up for a few seconds, and then I'll move away from it. And just, Mohammed, give us a very quick description. I'm going to put it up now of what happened in this situation.
Those are children. Well, by the way, one of the photos that I took, how the hospital delivered the message to a mother telling her your son is killed. Phone call. Your son is killed next to the borderline. He was playing football and he's dead. Come and collect his body. The mother is coming to rush to the hospital. She's coming to the refrigerator to take the bodies of the kids.
This one is not particularly difficult, but this again was quite an extraordinary.
That was a school. That's a bombing of a school.
I mean, it's difficult, but I meant not in the sense of it was. The next picture is quite a hard one to look at, so I'll put it up now. And Mohammed, if you can tell us what happened in this case. And I think this one illustrates really the danger of the work that you do every day.
This is a photo of our colleague, Fadl Shana. Can you see a boy down there?
Yeah, the light is a bit bright, but there's
right
another person
light.
Here.
Can you see the boy there?
Yeah.
There is a boy here, and there is another boy also. You can see the sandal of the boy, I think, somewhere in the photo. Yeah. Well, Fadl, he works for the International News Agency Reuters. As you see, his head is just apart from his body. He was filming, and he was in a car, which is for Reuters, clearly marked in English and Arabic that this is a press and this is TV. At that point, in fact, Fadl, he was taking footage, and he filmed the missile which cut his neck. The ambulances arrived very late. I asked why. Then the ambulance driver, I was going mad. Like, what is happening? Where are you guys? Can you tell me where are you? And then he's telling me, well, we had no gasoline for the ambulances because Israel is not allowing the gasoline into the Gaza Strip. So I said, what's the alternative? He said, well, the farmers here nearby have a donkey cart, so they will take the bodies on donkey carts.
Ahmed, how soon after that happened did you get to the scene? Were you there with...
I was there with my colleagues, yeah.
So that, I mean, you were very lucky to escape.
Well, most of it is a matter of luck, you know. It's not, you don't have really to be smart. It's just a matter of luck.
And where were you going that day with Fadl and
your colleagues? It was attacked an area called Juhr al-Diq. Yeah. It's a rural area. They are basically demolishing the houses and the trees. And we were just there to take photos and to cover what's happening and to take stories in the ground from people. And then actually we were on our way out to after we finished. I finished. But Fadl, he had to take more shots before he sent them to Jerusalem and then to London. But then he was killed.
After that happened, did you find it hard to go back to work?
It makes it very difficult, but you know, at some point you think someone has to do it. And you just say, well, if you don't do it, and if you don't do it, you know, those who don't want to see these realities, they are profiting from not showing these photos and documenting this. So in fact, it made me even more determined to continue my work as a journalist.
And Fadl is from Gaza and his colleagues?
Fadl is from Gaza, and Wafa', who was injured with him, is also from Gaza. Fadl was killed and Wafa' was seriously injured. And this is not the first incident, by the way. There are a lot of journalists who were shot and killed and injured while they were taking photos, and it's clearly marked as journalists. One of them was Ahmad, our colleague, who was shot. You can see the bullets hitting his feet, right, like all this boop, 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 boop. And the soldiers were clearly seeing that it's a journalist. Everybody can see that, and you can see that on our cameras that he's a journalist. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
The next picture is very difficult, but I felt it was important to show it because it shows the impact of a specific kind of weapon that was first used in Gaza several years ago, but quite widely used in the latest Operation Cast Lead last year. And this is quite a difficult picture to look at.
Well,
that's a result of the so-called dime.
It's dime, yeah. This is dime. This is definitely the dime that they're using. Actually, it burns the flesh, and you know, it makes it impossible for you to identify who's the dead. And you know the difficult thing? This is one shot. I mean, normally, you know, if there is a school or a crowd, you know, you can hear the communication between ambulance drivers discussing. We have 15 legs and 13 arms, and we have 20 this, 20 that. Do you have, there's two, three legs are missing. Have you got them? This is Al Awda Hospital and Kamal Adwan Hospital in Gaza communicating with each other. And I'm listening what they are saying. It's very difficult, really, to distinguish who's the body, who's that for, who's this. Because a mother at the end, when she loses her son, she would want a dignity to bury him the full body, not with some parts of it.
What's the date
of that picture? I'll just repeat the question. I will take a couple of questions.
Can I also ask a follow-up
But let's get the microphone to you, and then I'll take one or two others as well.
What was the date of that?
This picture? Was in the northern part of the Gaza Strip.